Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secure retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in. Because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast. I'm the Big Mike.
Mike Zlotnik, and today it is my pleasure and a privilege to welcome back Ken Majmadar. Hi, Ken.
Yes. Hey, Mike.
Thanks for coming back on a podcast. And Ken is the founder and managing partner at the Ridgewood Investments. It's a RIA, Registered Investment Advisor. He does both public markets and private securities, including real estate. So it's great to have you back, Ken.
Thanks,
before
Mike.
We do that, anything back. Exciting going on personally in the life of Ken? How's family? Anything super new, exciting?
Well, both my kids are flown the coop, so to speak. So we're empty nesting, but we're enjoying that sort of. It's like a phase transition backwards. It almost feels like we're dating again. No kids around, so it's been an adjustment, but generally a positive one. Gives my wife and I opportunities to travel together. She now accompanies me on some of our trips. We're both in CG, so I know she's been to CG a few times now, which never happened when kids were home. So it's been great. And obviously business-wise, on the public side, markets are at virtually all-time highs. I've been also involved in Bitcoin and things like that for a while. I have a crypto fund, and that's obviously at all-time highs pretty much. On the other hand, real estate, always something I believe in, but with interest rates having gone up, real estate, I think, is a little more stressed. There's still opportunities, obviously. And, in fact, I partnered with another of our folks in CG and some other folks, and, we created, an entity called Banksmore, where we're going to focus, mostly on multifamily. But it's probably going to be a fair amount of that is going to be ground multifamily as opposed to the traditionally a lot of the stuff we did was value added, where we would buy existing multifamily, increase the rents. So that's been recently a focus of our.
So that's interesting that you said that. A few things. I know you're a big, big fan of Warren Buffett. You've gone to Berkshire Hathaway annual meetings. You've got pictures with Warren Buffett years ago, old pictures, but you certainly follow Warren quite a bit. And when Charlie was alive, you too followed Charlie. So using exactly what Warren teaches, don't you think that the biggest value, and I may be wrong, I'm just asking for opinion. So based on what you said, public markets, especially the stock market, is at all-time highs. Bitcoin is at the, and crypto is at an all-time high, while a lot of real estate is substantially depressed because of a high interest rate environment. So from a value investing perspective, for fresh dollars going in today, don't you think that investing in real estate now feels a lot more attractive on a risk-adjusted basis versus trying to chase the stock market and trying to chase the Bitcoin? I'm just trying to put on my good old value investor hat. What do you think?
I would say yes and no. I would say more no than yes. And what I mean by that is, I think if you were to just invest in the market as a whole, of course, the stock market is higher than it used to be. And it has had a great run for the last 10, 12 years. People say that it's a market of stocks, not a stock market. And that's the analogy to, all real estate is local. So I think that there's still many opportunities in the stock market, and there's always going to be many opportunities in the real estate market, but the opportunities, they shift from one area of the market to the other, from the types of companies to another. So I'll give you an example, even in the stock market. So there's a lot of real estate companies in the stock market. And so, for example, there's the leading home builders of, in the United States. there's a couple of just I'm thinking of, they're trading at 10 times PE. Meanwhile, technology companies are, some of them are trading at 40 or 50 times earnings, or some are even more than that. So, They're both in the stock market, and so I don't necessarily look at things in such a bulk way, but rather try to be more nuanced about it. The other thing is, in the real estate side, a big part of real estate is leverage, and so I don't know. For example, I haven't seen we happen to have bid recently on a value-added multifamily in central Pennsylvania. It was about almost 200 units, 198. And we were nowhere near the winning bid. We were 5 million less, and we didn't want to go higher. Even in that market, it's a value add, and it's a good project. But at 5 million more than what we were willing to pay, we're scratching our heads. So I have not seen, I don't know if you have, a tremendous amount of really cheap commercial real estate. In the multifamily area, at least, that's like, you're just like stealing it. So maybe that will happen, but I have not seen that. So I don't see any major deep value yet in multifamily. I see, pressure and distress, right? Like people calling for capital. Their original business plan hasn't really panned out. It's taken too long. They're having trouble refinancing and rolling debt. But that has not, in my so far. I'm not on my desk. I'm not seeing a series of amazing deals, like at rock bottom prices. So I'm not sure exactly where this value on the real estate side is. And more broadly, I cover all these different areas, whereas I think a lot of folks in real estate, a lot of folks I personally know, through CG and other places, they believe only in real estate. And I've always been consistent saying that that's not the only game in town. But and we just agree to disagree, and we're all still friends. But I think in the fullness of time, my approach has certainly worked very well for our clients, that I don't just limit myself to saying the stock market is bad and real estate is good.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You are a much more flexible investor because you basically have the flexibility of doing things in various markets. Picking, obviously, it's a market of stocks, not the stock market. So you like that, to be a lot more picky in your selections. And of course, same thing with real estate. Just like you said, all real estate is local, so it's all different market by market. All I was trying to refer is on a relative basis. If we looked at a really big picture, if you were just given a few simple choices, yeah, it feels like the stock market is fully priced and the Bitcoin, again, crypto. I'm not going to comment anything beyond the fact that it has had a great bull run. Speculation, of course, that it could be in a balloon of sorts. Who knows? But real estate market, again, based on the theory, if you can get the right deal, and what you just described is an environment where getting a great deal is still rare, and the distress is there, but to buy really, really deep, that's still happening pretty rarely. So maybe more time is needed for these distress situations to come to actual market and transact at a price that you want to buy. And that's why a few things are transacting, right? The buyers and the sellers, bid and ask spreads are pretty significant, and that might take time to shake in. So let's go back to what you're doing. I know you partner with Eric in Pennsylvania, and you're building ground up. Are you building new multifamily ground up? Is that what you're doing? I'm just curious what you're.
Well, we're going to do some value add too if we find the right deals. But the first two deals that we're focusing on, and there's going to be a few more probably this year. So it's one of them is we're taking a existing building of approximately 85,000 square feet, somewhere in that range. And we're going to turn it into, I think it's 97 multifamily units with amenities and all. So that's a commercial office building that we're going to
What are you
turn into
converting?
residential.
Office to multifamily?
Office to res to apartments, yes.
Okay, so that whole theory
So it was
makes
an
a lot of
old.
sense in the post-COVID world if you can convert it at the right price, because the conversion process is difficult and expensive in
Yeah.
general.
Exactly. So I think let me do the math on that. I think we're probably going to buy that building for under $30 a square foot. And then even with all of the costs, if you look at our cost per unit for
How much is
97
the cost
units,
per square foot? If you're
it's
buying
going
a
to be.
$30 a foot, how much are you converting? And of course, some square foot is just going to go away, but if you
Yeah, I think we're going to be. Let me just quickly do the math on it, if I'm doing this right. So I think all in, we're going to have 97, so we're probably going to be all in at 125 or 130. And that's going to be completely new, basically class A product with, with amenities, gym and a nice lounge and business center and all this kind of stuff. And this one is outside Harrisburg. I had not known before we looked at this, but partners on this team educated me that Harrisburg just turns out as sort of, secondary rental markets in the Harrisburg, of course, the capital of Pennsylvania.
Okay, folks, this is Big Mike on a Big Mike Fun podcast. I'm back with Ken Muchtamar. We had a little bit of an interruption with technology being a little choppy. So we're back. So we'll continue straight from where we left off. Ken, so let's talk a little bit about your projects this year. And you were talking about a project in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, capital of Pennsylvania, where you're buying an office building for about $30 a foot. And you're all in expecting to be about $130 a foot. So your construction cost is about $100 a foot, which is a lot more than the price you're paying for the building.
Of course, of course.
And you're gonna
Yeah,
have a brand new
that's
product
right.
when you're done, right? That's the thought process.
Basically, right. That's the thought process. And obviously we're getting the building for 50% of what it appraised for 20 years ago, which it was already vacant for a long time. We really like this project. We're going to turn it into 97 units. But what I was saying was that if you can create new product at a significant, like even if it's a little more expensive than existing product, but you don't have that all the deferred maintenance, you clearly have a superior offer for people who want to live somewhere. Obviously, I don't know if you ever lived like in a new building versus an old building, but obviously it's much better to live in a new building. At least I find that to be the case. And you usually get a premium on a per square foot basis. Meanwhile, your operating costs and operating expenses tend to be somewhat lower. So it ends up being I find if I can get new product at even a reasonable premium to existing value add, product that was built in the 70s or 80s, I would rather have new product. And so what we're finding is that at least we're looking at build to rent as maybe a big focus area. Separately, we were talking earlier about the stock market and stuff, and I mentioned that there's, for example, home builders, leading home builders that are trading for 10 times, 11 times PE, even though the market as a whole is trading at, close to 20 times PE. And they're good companies. And there's about I was just listening to a podcast. There's about a 3 million unit, housing deficit, still to be worked through. And every year we need about 1.5 million new homes. And so even if they push that and say they're able to make 1.7 million new homes a year, it's probably going to take, the better part of a decade and a half or more to work through the existing shortage. So even in the stock market, there are opportunities in and outside of real estate. And in real estate, until prices of existing multifamilies maybe adjust or maybe the distress finally comes through enough where there's actually assets that get sold at much better prices. We think that if you can find land or existing assets at the right basis and convert them, there's clearly the demand is there, for good housing. That part is there. And the other thing I want to mention to your point about, is there value in real estate is, partly it will depend on what happens with interest rates, right? So if we're in a higher for longer thing, or if interest rates continue to go higher, it's going to continue to add pressure and stress to real estate. But right now, people are thinking that we're at that kind of plateau, and that people are anticipating that the Fed will will start easing. And so if that ends up happening, then and you buy assets at 7% mortgage rates, and I mean maybe they won't go all the way back down to 3%, but even if they go down to 5%, that's a 200 basis points drop. That will probably put some real tailwind again behind all kinds of real estate. So, but we'll see what happens,
Yeah, I appreciate it, Ken. So I completely support that theory. Of course, we can talk about a couple of possible scenarios, more of economic, where there is a stagflation and Fed is forced to keep the rates at an elevated level higher for longer, and versus an environment where we really start decelerating and inflation comes down, even though economy is softening and the Fed cuts. So that will be a tailwind. But let's go back to the basics here, because I got a couple of things I wanted to dive a little deeper. Number one, of course, you are converting what is dislocated asset class, and there's been a lot of discussions on the topic, what to do with all this office space. So if you're taking an old office and you're repositioning through full renovation and redevelopment into multifamily units, which is in high demand, and the demand for multifamily is fundamentally very strong. So there's no argument we are in severe shortage. Especially this is true in some markets. So some markets have seen a lot of new construction, and some markets are certainly under supplied. So I'm assuming in Harrisburg it's significantly undersupplied versus some of the Sun Belt areas where there's been a lot of new development. So you bring in new product to the market, and you're also demonstrating what to do with dysfunctional office that has been kind of a dying asset class for many years, and COVID obviously completely buried the asset class or put it near the grave. So you can buy it at a steep discount,
Steep discount, right?
yeah, to the reconstruction cost. But the big question becomes obviously complexity of redevelopment. This is what I've heard. If you can redevelop at a reasonable cost, are you getting any incentives? Because what I've seen and heard that in order for the math to work well, you got to give some either tax credits, state, city, federal tax incentives, because if you don't, the math gets tougher because the cost to redevelop is very significant.
We think we will apply for and get property tax relief because, one of the good things about these type of projects, and by the way, the other one, which you didn't talk about or touch on even yet, that one is a ground up multifamily development, and that one will be outside Columbus. So,
Columbus,
those are the
Ohio.
first two, Columbus, Ohio. So those are both the one, those are the first two that we in this new group are working on together. Obviously it's called Banksmore, but all of the principals, including myself, have a lot of experience, doing things individually. And so these are the first two projects that we're going to work on as a group together. Yeah, I mean, like every project, there's always risks and uncertainties and things. And like pure ground up, like the one in Columbus that I'm alluding to, that one is just a lot more under our control, right? Like, there's no surprises or anything like that. Whereas in the other one, you can have a potential for surprises. So you always build in a maybe a contingency in both. But the thing, that makes it attractive is one is like in that area, right? It's just outside Harrisburg. There's not going to be a lot of land like in good prime locations and in good prime areas. So right, you're in a more of an infill location. So where are you going to find land to do, big ground up? You can't. But the other thing is like, I think like that particular one, we're probably buying it more like 20 something a square foot. But if you just look at the structure and the parking lot and the foundation and everything, right, the replacement value, you probably couldn't even build that for 100 a foot.
I agree 100%. So there's no argument that office trades at, $30 a foot, 30% versus the price of what it used to be. And if you compare it exactly what you said, the price you're paying versus what it was worth 20 years ago, you're still getting a steep discount. That's crazy what has happened to office space. So no argument. At the end of the day, what it'll come down to is it cheaper to redevelop versus building ground up? The crazy
So
part
that,
is.
and that's what we're looking at. But in this particular case where you couldn't even find land there of this type, and
So
then
you can
to
demolish,
replicate
right?
that
You can
same amount,
demolish the asset completely and
you
build on
could
the
demolish
plan.
it. So clearly it's all based on like the condition, the floor plates and all of that. This particular one, we feel is actually quite low risk. But we'll see. And I don't think but some of them that you could have a lot of risk, right? This one was generally a functionally good, solid construction. And so we're essentially having to redo all the interiors, rip out all the walls and everything, and then redo the plumbing, electrical, walls, and furnishings and fixtures. We'll see, because it's the first one of these two, and then we're planning to maybe do four this year. But I like ground up because of the risk is lower. And then obviously in certain markets, I like this sort of adaptive reuse idea as well, if the basis seems attractive enough. And we feel that the risk of any surprises is low, which is our assessment. Now, again, we'll see. It could turn out that we could have missed something. I mean, generally, there are always surprises in everything, including all the stuff we've done together. But you just work through it, and you build in contingencies.
Yeah, I appreciate that overview, and I concur with you. The surprises could be significant, especially on the projects where there's a lot of work, right? Anytime you go through heavy value add, development or development, or ground up, there can be obviously surprises. One, in the cost of inflation; two, in the complexities. And I've been involved with a few redevelopment projects, and I can tell you, it's always whatever you think you're going to get, it's always a lot more than that. So.
And then, that may turn out to be the case here. We'll see. But we thought these ones were attractive relative to what else, the other alternatives that we had. And the other thing is, what's nice about redevelopment is you can build in greater cushions in things, because costs tend to be higher anyway. If you make the project successful, then those are assets that you probably could, some of them you could hold generationally. But we'll see.
Well, I certainly wish you best of luck. I appreciate the explanation. The fury makes a lot of sense. Ultimately, the devil's in the details. And then the only other comment I'll have is I've seen people trying to apply for federal and state credits if building has some historic value or some of that, those credits become available because the cities want to incentivize certain redevelopment.
Well, and that's a very good point that I want to bring up. That is true here. Is like so like in these kind of projects, when you have an empty building especially, you usually get a fairly good amount of cooperation from the towns and the cities, because they'd rather not see a vacant structure. They'd rather see it, being put to productive use. So they tend to be a little more supportive from different angles.
Local politics. The key is local politics, because at the end of the day, there are even local grants, all kinds of local incentives, but you got to be connected to the community at the end of the day.
And the other point I should make is, obviously, like the degree of difficulty when you do ground up or even adaptive reuse compared to value add is just a lot higher. So that means that you have to have the ability to execute, and that requires a great team. And you're managing more complexity and more risk. That ultimately, if you can manage all of that, which not everybody can, successfully, then you should. It does generally lead to better returns. So we'll see.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And theory is absolutely correct. And then at the end of the day, if the interest rates cooperate, they move in the right direction. You get the project rolling with interest rates being where they are today, you have a tailwind. But
Exactly.
yeah, we don't know. This whole great discussion, and I've had discussion on this topic, whether we can actually see a stagflation, higher for longer rates stuck, and which will not necessarily be good news for real estate. We have stagnant economy while we still see inflation,
The
and
surprising thing,
that's a
though,
separate
is
conversation.
the surprising thing is that the economy, though, has been very strong in spite of these lower rates, and you're seeing that, like I said, in the stock market, among other areas. So where you would have thought, hey, if you told somebody 2 years ago that interest rates are going up, 400 basis points, and mortgage rates are going to be at 7%, we both of us probably might have guessed that the economy would be much softer than it is right now. And that's been an interesting thing to see.
Yeah, I just had another episode released, and that episode I had a guest who is one of the brightest minds on the Fed policy, and the way she attributes to the strength in the economy is to the private credit. So the banks withdrew credit, the cost of money obviously much higher through the high interest rates, plus the bank much harder, much tighter lending conditions. But not to repeat what she said, but the basic summary, private credit has stepped in. Private credit has been, and the private credit has been surprisingly resilient and strong. And in fact, it's a lot more attractive. If interest rates have gone up, it's more attractive for private credit or call hard money loans or call it whatever you want to call it. But that's been sort of substituting what the banks have done in the past. But let's continue the discussion to what you are doing, where you're seeing the opportunity. So I agree that fundamental demand for housing units is strong and will continue to grow. One of the real basic things what has happened is we've got millions of undocumented immigrants that have gone over the border. And I'm an immigrant. I don't know if you are a first generation immigrant or you were born in the States, but we're all immigrants. We
I'm
came
first
here.
generation immigrant, yes.
So when we came over, we came into a process. I came through a political process where I applied for to be a refugee from the former Soviet Union, and the US allowed me to enter, and I had to wait to go into the country, right? This is many, many, many years ago. Now the undocumented immigrants just kind of went over the border, and they need a place to live. And the demand for units is just has grown quite a bit. And it's an aggregate demand. And they're sitting, you know, I'm in New York City, and there's no place to put them. They're everywhere. And many other cities are overloaded with these folks, and they continue to come over. But it's increasing aggregate demand. So demand for housing units in aggregate continues to increase. And maybe ultimately folks will have to be leave New York City and go to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and increase demand there, right? And it's aggregate demand. It's not demand for those units. The brand new units may be leased to the folks who were living in different units, but the folks who will get government checks and government help, they'll have to go into the less expensive units. But aggregate demand is growing, and it's growing at a pretty healthy pace. So immigration in general grows aggregate demand as a basic sort of a concept. In addition to that, shortage of supply plus population growth in general is just so I'm completely in agreement that multifamily housing or built-to-rent housing is going to be fundamentally a great asset class. But you're still dealing with the construction in the high interest rate environment. And of course, you got to raise equity. Have you, I'm just curious, have you built the plans yet? You're just starting. You're just looking at these projects and you haven't yet put them together. We were chatting briefly. You were saying that you will be working on capital raising for these projects. So you assume you're going to be raising some debt, some bank debt, and you're going to try to raise
Yes,
equity.
yeah. We're going to have bank debt on both, and then we're going to have equity on both. The Harrisburg one is going to be 97 units, but that one is going to be about 2.5 million of equity, so it's a relatively small amount of equity. The one in Columbus, we are looking at more like 7.5 million of equity. So that one's a 20-something million dollar project. The other one's about an 11 plus or minus an $11 million
You're
project.
talking about pretty high leverage. The example you just gave, still the leverage you're talking about is pretty high. In this environment, the banks are lending very low leverage. Like 65% leverage is an extremely high leverage in this environment that you don't go higher. How are you able to
Yeah.
get that kind of leverage?
Well, we're. I'm saying. Well, we're. I'm not count. I'm saying outside capital. So, I'm not counting capital that we might be putting up. And then there's some other credits and things that we're going to get. But we're probably. We're probably still. We're not going to be at 65. I think we're going to be at 75 percent, something like that.
Yeah, I'd be surprised. And I mean this not necessarily negatively if you can get the 75% leverage on a ground up or redevelopment, but hey, if
I
you
think
can do it,
part of
there's
it
so
may
much
be
more
like,
power.
for example, the project where the one in Harrisburg as an example, where we're actually buying the property for 50% of the appraised value from a while ago.
But that's on that argument. I just want to put this point. I've seen this argument so many, many times. And people tell me I'm getting a great deal on land for new construction, or I'm getting a really great deal on an old office building for redevelopment. And I'll say that's wonderful. But what overall percentage of the cost is your land or your building? It's small. So if you're paying $30 a foot and it used to
Well,
be
usually it's 20%, is roughly.
Yeah, so if you're getting a discount on something that's worth 20%, the overall impact is not that big. Because
So the
80%
value is
off
3
is.
million. Let's say the value is 3 million, even though that's way below the cost to build a structure like that in that place. So if that's 20%, then 5 times 3 is 15, which is roughly the value when it's done will be more in that 13 and a half, 14 range. But our budget is to do it, including the acquisition, everything, for under around 12, a little less than 12.
So you're gonna buy for $1.5 million. You're going to
Correct.
do all in for 12 million. Is that what you're saying?
Roughly, yeah.
But hold the horses. I guess you got 196 units at 100
No. That one is 97 units. 97
97
units.
units at total cost about $130 a foot, right?
Something like that. Yeah, whatever you're. I'm looking at it more on a unit basis, but yeah, so maybe 130,000 a unit is what you meant.
Oh, sorry, per unit. Yeah, per unit.
Yeah,
Okay.
yeah, yeah.
That's fine. And then what's the valuation? What's the exit value? What's the per
Probably
unit?
gonna be in the well, we're the overall project's probably gonna be worth around 14, 15, right, initially, based on NOI and all of that.
But wait a minute, wait a minute. What you just said, and I
Say
don't like that.
14. Yeah. Yep.
14, and you have 96 units, is like a little over about 140, 150 thousand
Yep.
per unit, right?
Yep, right.
And you're all in to build 125, 130. Does that sound
Yeah.
right?
Yeah,
That
that sounds
feels
about right.
way tight. I mean this with all due respect. Feels super tight. I mean that math would
145, yeah. Well, we're
so
not also that we're not counting yet. We're expecting a tax credit and there's some other things, but I mean, we can, well, we're happy to share the details with you and get your input on it. I don't have
I'll
all the
just
Excel
give
sheets
you
right in front of me.
one quick comment. Not
Yeah.
saying the numbers, your math may be totally fine, but if you're all in for 125 per unit and 130 per unit, and when you're done, you're worth 145, 150. The only way that can work, obviously, if you get tax abatement for the next 15 years, that's wonderful, but you need more incentives. I was looking at another project with actually another CG guy where he was getting historic federal and state tax credits. Tax credits are hugely valuable. Without tax credits, the math just didn't work. And I looked at it in the past because of heavy redevelopment cost. And the crazy part, that project is very similar. He's taking an old office building downtown, trying to redevelop. You need additional incentives. That's my general feedback here. And without looking at the math, I can't tell you anything other than if you're all in 125 and you're selling for 150, and you
Yeah,
have
I mean, I'm using like round
right.
numbers, so maybe it's 120 and 150, and maybe there's a tax
You
credit and
need
whatever.
more.
Where this is all back of the envelope, but yeah, it's been underwritten. I've looked at the underwriting, so have other folks, and we're planning to move forward with it. So, and I had the initial comment, just the same comment that you're making now. I had my first pass through it, and then when we dug down deeper into the details, like. For example, I said 12, but it's probably like just over 11. There's a few hundred thousand here and there that moves around, and that probably makes some difference.
So I'll give you the following final couple of feedback. So one, I applaud you for doing this, right? This is important. This is good for the community. This helps redevelopment, whatever city and town, Harrisburg or Columbus. It helps local economy. Two, if you run underwritten conservatively and you have significant buffer and the numbers still pencil, that's wonderful, right? And ultimately, if the interest rates help, then the project could be even.
Right. Now, obviously, like we're looking at kind of almost a base, somewhat conservative case with the numbers that I'm quoting. But a few things could make it, quite a bit better. So I don't want to like quote you like our optimistic projection. But we feel for whatever reason, because I think we're working with a bank already, then we're working to get a loan commitment. I think we're looking at about 2.5 million of equity for that project. And I think the total cost is like 11 something.
So the bank's giving you floating rate debt, I assume, for construction, right? They're giving you some kind of floating. Well, I'm
Yeah,
just
we're
curious.
gonna try to get a permanent like takeout as part of the original package. So essentially, the way the package should hopefully work is that we put up the
Build to
equity,
perm
we
model.
buy, yes, the build to perm. And so we wouldn't have that uncertainty. And so the idea is like basically once we get the CO, they're willing to flip it into a longer term financing.
Understood, but you're still starting with the
Yeah.
floating rate debt. And then the one
Correct. Yeah.
question that I have is, what rate are you getting? What is bank quoting you on a floating rate
We
debt?
have not gotten that far, but we're assuming it's going to be at whatever current market is. And that's really more one of my partners who's more on the development side is negotiating with them.
Understood. So let's switch the subject just for a couple of minutes, and then we'll wrap up. What
Sure.
else are you doing? What are the opportunities you're seeing? And by the way, the public market comment about the builders, stocks of the builders, I've
Yeah.
heard that argument too, that they've been beaten up and there is some potential discount, but you have to be a specialist in these publicly traded REITs, develop, especially builder REITs, where
Yeah.
you're feeling that you're genuinely getting a good discount. I have no other comment other than the price of those stocks is a function of the stock market. So they can go up and down with the, at the depending on what the stock market decides. Versus
Yeah.
private investment, of course, you're building based on sort of inefficient markets where you don't have this type of market-driven forces. You have more of a supply demand than fundamental math. So what are the opportunities you're seeing? I'm just curious, anything interesting you're
Well,
seeing?
I think obviously the ones in real estate that we're talking about, but I think there's still a lot of opportunity. Like even though you have, I mean, let's just use home builders as just an example that are publicly traded. You know, there's probably five or six leading ones. Their capital allocation policies and their valuation is as if they're below average businesses, but they've become probably above average businesses. So that transition hasn't been fully reflected in the market. And so that's like a, kind of a niche example. I think if you're long, I mean, most of my investing is very long term, which is different than most people. But so I look for really opportunities to create wealth in the long run. And one of the reasons, by the way, I like the stock market is because I personally, you know, have a very substantial part, like, you know, that I built, you know, great portfolio of companies that I've invested in that are now well appreciated way beyond my basis. And I get liquidity and I get to this create this wealth without doing any work. But then on top of that, banks love the collateral. So I can leverage that and then do real estate with the collateral that I build in the stock market. And I think since your audience is probably more real estate and private market people, I'll say the same thing, which I've been saying for years, that no real estate people ever listen to and constantly argue with me against, which is fine. But you know, is that there's more than, you know, it's not that the only place to make money is in the real estate market. And in fact, it makes sense to have some liquidity. Oh, all these other investments that we're talking about in the market are liquid. Now, I should make a point that what should be an advantage that you can have liquidity ends up for most people being a disadvantage because their mindset is one of a trader or of a short-term owner of something rather than a long-term owner, which is what I do and what I encourage. But buying a great business and letting it compound and, you know, go up 10x or 20. I mean, you know, not too many people probably have experience where you buy a company and it goes up 5 or 10 times your cost basis and it still has growth ahead of it. I've experienced that many, many times, and so have my clients. And it's just, you know, it's just a different. You know, it works well, I think, with real estate and other things. So I still think there's opportunity there. I actually think there's opportunity in crypto. I've been involved in it since I first figured it out, and that was in 2013, so 11 years. I'm probably one of the earlier people, at least in my field. And I, you know, I went on Freedom Founders. This was 2 or 3 years ago, saying, you know, crypto, and I explained my whole thesis and everything. But you know, like. You know, and again, I have more power to everybody. Everybody, you know, there's wealth in real estate. There's wealth in all these different areas. I think a lot of people make the mistake that just because something went up, that the opportunity is gone. And the really good stuff, if you figure it out and you're long-term oriented, a lot of times there's still many, many years ahead of you. But not everything. So that's where you have to sort of, you know, have some framework and apply it consistently, you know?
Yeah, I can appreciate your wisdom and some of the things you mentioned. I will agree in some things. I will not necessarily agree. I might disagree a little bit. So
Absolutely.
I'm like Warren Buffett. I struggle with this, and I have a lot of friends who are crypto bucks and they're gigantic crypto bucks, and they
I'm
feel.
but I'm not a crypto bug and I'm not a gold bug, but there's a fundamental framework that a lot of people do. I have this framework since 2013. This could be the subject of a different conversation someday. I've been explaining this consistently. I've not changed. It's been the same exact explanation that I figured out in 2013. And it's been playing out gradually, but it's still, I think we still have another decade or two to go.
So I'll let you provide that comment. So why do you think crypto? And again, I follow Warren Buffett, and Warren Buffett said, and he's been wrong, right? He said something like this, that if he had all the money in the world, he wouldn't pay $25 for all the Bitcoin in the world. So again,
Well, it's actually
I'm just
ironic.
saying he doesn't see that there's no, there's a network effect. There's all kinds of things that maybe he doesn't see in real value behind it. There's
It's
some kind
actually
of.
ironic because one of the reasons I was able to figure it out in 2013 was because of a comment he made at a Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting with respect to gold. And that comment, I don't remember the exact year, but it was probably around 2010. And he said, "Hey, if you took all the gold in the whole history of the world that had ever been mined or created or is stored or whatever, and you put it in one place, it would fit into an Olympic-sized swimming pool, and it would be a cube a couple hundred feet per on a side. And that cube, the value of that cube is $10 trillion." And so when I heard that, and then I made the connection to crypto and what crypto represented, which I can't get into all the details, but that's I had presented that exact thing to a small group of Freedom Founders people. That is what I think that framework. Now, Warren Buffett was also really good friends with Bill Gates, and he never invested in Microsoft. Warren Buffett is a
He
brilliant
missed a lot
guy.
of opportunities too. Yeah, he
No,
missed
he's
a
smart.
lot.
He's smarter than me, but some of that I greatly admire, and I've learned a tremendous amount from. Charlie Munger, who I also greatly admire, who recently passed away, that you alluded to at the age of 99, he called it rat poison, but you know what? The great thing about the world and the great thing about markets is everybody can have their opinion and everybody, and there's no one who's right all the time, even the smartest guys in the world. And maybe they are right this time, but ultimately we each make a bet based on our own thinking. Even though I admire them incredibly and I've learned a lot from them, I don't just copy or believe everything they say.
I agreed on that point completely. So what's really, one of the greatest wisdoms is that even the wisest of us all and the best investors in the world, they probably don't see plenty of opportunities that they miss. They invest in what they understand. For some reason, they didn't understand some of those things and they didn't want to understand. Then maybe
And
that's
it's not
that.
even surprising, right? Like Buffett is like 94 and Munger's 99 and he died. Like, would you expect them to figure every new thing that comes around
I
that was
agree.
invented 10 years
They
ago?
invested in what they understood, and then they are kind of old dogs, and old dogs don't always learn new tricks. So I mean, this with all due respect. Couple of final things, and then we got to wrap up. And I wanted to add with one comment that most investors don't do this, but this is the most important thing. When you invest, you got to have a long-term time horizon, and especially if you invest in real estate, may it be either private real estate or public real estate. When you're buying the stocks of these publicly traded companies, you got to have a long-term horizon. Like the Warren Buffett says, I want to own something forever. This is a fundamentally good company. I'd rather pay a fair price for a great company than a great price for a fair company. See, it may so be, again, that what you alluded to, some of these publicly traded stocks of the builders, if they're fundamentally strong companies and they're trading at a discount, maybe that creates an opportunity, which you alluded to. And there could be also a great opportunity in private real estate when the market is genuinely dislocated and deeper discounts become available. So most of the audience is real estate audience, no argument at all. But I do like to provide just a comment on what you said. If these are publicly traded real estate investments, they do provide better liquidity than the private ones. That's one of the major things that people don't necessarily appreciate. Liquidity could be important, and a publicly traded security has liquidity while a private investment doesn't, so which makes a big difference in some ways.
Yeah, with the multifamily now, we're starting to get a lot of capital calls and stuff. And I bet you when that starts happening, people will appreciate that they wish they had some more liquidity than they did when times were booming.
Well, the whole capital call, and I'll tell you this, so just one quick comment on capital calls. It is very difficult methodology, which is faltering today. Folks that are trying to look for capital calls, a lot of these projects are failing to achieve what they need from capital calls. From what I heard, only about a third to 50% of the investors that they receive capital call letters participate. So with that in mind, a lot of projects struggle and they're forced to do to raise mass capital. It's one of the discussions we've had in the past, and I know several.
But then that's going to eat, that's potentially going to eat away with the equities
Yeah, it
value.
dilutes existing equity. And the investors might as well participate in the new mass equity rather than try to feed the capital call, because new mass equity gives investors, old investors and new investors, opportunity to participate in the upside of the project. And a lot of the past dollars that were invested in these rough situations financially, it's a terrible picture. But investors have to realize, if they wrote a check and the property lost 20% of the value, and then there was a leverage on a property, the equity may be worth only 20 cents on a dollar, maybe even not worth 20 cents. That's the crazy part, right?
No, but that's a lot of, like a lot, and we're both in this area, but like a lot of the folks that run around, syndicating things, they make it all sound like so rosy and like guaranteed, and the stock market is risky and this thing's so great. And look, that the reality is going to hit the road soon. And all those guys selling syndications 2 years ago, promising the sun and the moon. Let's see how their reputations, adjust to the new reality.
Yeah, the difficult part is, of course, when the markets were hot and everything was going well, these deals looked great. But when the market changed fast and furious, of course, a lot of these projects have, I don't want to put it any other way, but it's a massive collapse. It's a tidal wave that hit the market, and many of these deals are just going bust completely. And
Well, but look at those deals that I was saying, hey, like their folks would come to me and say, hey, I'll give you 10% and I'll get 80% of the upside for the sponsor and 20%, and people sign up for that deal. Well, how are they going to do in the cycle? They did some deals like that when times were good and they got 20% of the upside. Now then they did some more deals and now they're gonna those deals are gonna lose maybe half their money or more. And in the cycle, are they going to make money on real estate? I'm kind of scratching my head.
Well, what you just described is deals that were not offered at the fair pricing or proper risk-adjusted return type of pricing. And the other big challenge, and I can tell you this, over the years from the Great Financial Crisis, let's just call it 2008, 9, for many, many years, there were years of great recovery. And people made lots of money over the years. And they kept piling up and kept piling up, and they didn't use prudent diversification. And the checks written in 21, 22 were greatly outsized relative to their past checks. Or new people entered the market and they didn't enjoy those great years. And the lack of diversification and really not understanding that there's still risk in everything, or not appreciate, maybe understanding but not willing to appreciate, is now teaching a very hard, harsh lesson. I'm one of these people who made significant investments the last couple of years, and it's very painful. It's very, very painful because the market, well, the way it turned, it's, by the way, it's such a rare event after almost 20 years of zero interest rates to see the rates rise like this. It's been a black swan event, complete black swan. When it happens, it dislocates the market. And when it dislocates the market, you don't take a 10% haircut or 20% haircut. You can take a entire principal loss, right? And it happens. It's a
Yeah. Well, with
really
lev when
bad
you have
news.
leverage, you don't need that much of a
Leverage.
decline.
Leverage
That's
what?
why real estate works so great on the upside too, but then that hurts you on the downside. So it's really what you do in the cycle. I mean, I've done a few things here in the last few years, but a lot less than I did, the years before. And But again, as a long-term investor, I believe in real estate through the cycle, but you just have to be smart about it.
I agree, and the final comment I'll make this is, those folks that have been hurt significantly the last couple of years because the market has changed. Well, they're hurt now. They invested 21, 22, my view on the world is this. You can be upset and discouraged and completely shine away from real estate investments. And in my view, it's the wrong thing to do. The right opportunity is to be prudent, of course. If you run away from the market, when the market is bottoming out, you may miss a great opportunity. And that's always been kind of Warren Buffett's scenario. Be greedy is when I was a fearful, and be fearful when I was greedy. Right now,
For
the
sure.
fear is huge and it's growing. And the time to be greedy, maybe not immediately today, but pretty soon, when the market sort of hits a great discounted price. And if these deals can become available, that's the time to come in, right? Interest rates are high, the prices are low. You come in at that point, you can pick up a lot of upside from there, right? That's the general theory. Of
Absolutely.
course, full disclaimer, we don't have a crystal ball.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's lit. That's I agree with everything you said, so.
Thank you, Ken. How would folks get a hold of you? What's the best way to reach out?
My website is ridgewoodinvestments.com. Actually, if folks are on social media, please follow me on LinkedIn, Ken Majmudar, and Instagram, also Ken Majmudar. Just search for me. I post a lot of content on, investing and real estate and just live, wisdom in general. Yeah, and then as I mentioned, Banksmore is the other company that's really focusing on the ground up opportunities as well.
Thank you, Ken, for coming on a podcast. Thank you for sharing your wisdom and your experience, and let folks reach out. And thanks again.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to bigmikefund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike's Zlotnick. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.